What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Don Reeve, who's been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detectives shaken, to find the Southside Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, The Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, The Scare on Prime Video, now streaming.
Welcome to the Bloody Disgusting Podcast, everyone, the podcast where we discuss all the disgusting things we love in the horror world. And to help us discuss the disgusting, you know her as lead movie critic for Bloody Disgusting, horror movie fanatic and journalist Megan Navarro. Hey, Megan.
Hi.
And you know her from her YouTube channel and website, Real Queen of Horror, and her infinite love for the genre, Zena Dixon. Hey, Zena.
Hello.
And I'm John. If you're listening to this on Wednesday when the episode drops, we hope your week's been filled with all the best kinds of horror. If not, maybe we can help. We're breaking from the usual episode format to do another deep dive, this time Scream 6, which is now available on digital and Paramount Plus. Yay, Paramount Plus.
Yay. Yeah.
As of you, if you listen to this on a Wednesday, it would have dropped yesterday, so go watch it. Please, please, please go watch it. Don't listen to us until after you watch it, and then come back.
Yeah.
And then like listen to all of our episodes again, and because downloads and stuff like that. That's right. Deep dive time, baby. Fair warning, during this deep dive into Scream 6, there will be nothing but spoilers from here on out. Did y'all get sick of me seeing spoilers every other time we've done deep dives?
Spoilers,
well, guess what?
Spoilers.
Going into this one blind is the only way to really get the most out of the film. It's a Scream film.
Yeah.
While they're formulaic, they're an evolving formula.
Yes.
But we don't want to spoil the reveals. So please, please. I can't imagine there's that many people out there that's like, nah, I'll listen to this and then go watch it. Like,
yeah, no,
don't do that.
Yeah, don't.
And that will be the last spoiler warning we give this episode. So if you're still listening in the other room, car, whatever, trying to fumble, turn off the volume, press stop. Okay. We'll give you the slow countdown as usual. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, here we go. So from here on out, the reins are officially in Megan's hands. So Megan, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
So I don't really think that Scream 6 is a movie that needs a whole lot of setup. I feel like people know, plot-wise, Ghostface is back. And so are the characters from Scream 5. This released in theaters on March 10th, so literally last month. And just to add context, because I think it's fascinating, the original Scream opened in theaters in December 1996, became a sleeper hit, and then Scream 2 was literally a year later, released December 1997. Just noting that because Scream 6 kind of follows Scream 2's blueprint in that it's following the survivors to college. So that is, I feel like, all the setup we really need on this.
And they do actually call it out in the movie.
Yes, yes.
Isn't this what happened? And not saying Scream 2, but hey, this happened before.
Yes, multiple times, yes. So it is definitely having a conversation with Scream 2. So, you know, go back and watch that too, maybe? I don't know. But beyond that, what were your expectations going into Scream 6? Because I do think that Scream 5 was a Dark Trio approved movie, right? We all liked it, or am I misremembering?
Yes.
We did.
We did.
We did. It took me two viewings.
It took you two
viewings. It's not that I didn't approve. It's that I just wasn't really on board because I was like, I didn't really know what was happening because of all the new characters.
Right.
What sold it for me more than anything else was David Arquette in Scream 5. So him by himself basically made me approve. I just love the story arc for Dewey in Scream 5.
On that note, what did you feel about Scream 6? Like, in the months leading up to the release, were you excited? Were you like, well, we'll see where it goes?
You know, the trailer that I saw, and maybe there were multiple trailers, but the trailer I saw were, there was the subway, and then you see the convenience store scene.
Mm-hmm.
That sold me.
Okay.
That I was like, I loved the dirty, gritty looking ghost face mask. To me, it was kind of, which is a weird parallel. It was like watching Rogue One, the Star Wars story.
Okay.
Where all of a sudden, like, it starts out and they're on like this dirty mining prison planet and all the stormtroopers are dirty. Like they're covered in dirt and grime and something. There's something about that. When you take that crisp, clean look of something and make it a little bit more grimy,
yeah.
For whatever reason, in my ridiculously simple brain, I'm like, ooh, this is going to be gritty and real. Like, it's so dumb. It's such a simple marketing tactic.
I like that this tiny little detail is really a big deal for you. Zena,
yeah.
I assume you also were pretty amped going in.
I was very excited, but I'm not going to lie. I was so nervous. I was nervous because, you know, with what happened in Scream 5, it's just my heart cannot, you know. So I was super nervous about it. And I waited. Like, I remember I was able to see Scream 5 early, but this one I waited to see it because, you know, I remember people were like spoiling the last one. So,
yeah,
and I had to mute it like on social media. Anyway, so I went in super excited, and I already told you guys this. I watched they had like a teaser on the train, you know, in the subway and stuff like that. Those loved it so much, but I didn't watch the trailer. You know, I didn't watch it until after I checked it out, and it just made me have like a really great appreciation for the movie.
Same. I was the same because I saw that subway clip that was like the little teaser, and then I was determined to not watch anything past that because I want to go in. This is a movie, you know, you want to go in knowing nothing. You want no clues about what could the whodunit mystery be. But I also, so I was nervous too about some of the characters' fates, but I also was just kind of like laid back about it. I don't think I was nearly as excited as I was 5 just because I knew that the same people were involved, and I was thinking, well, I'm going to like it, so I'm fine. I'm way more excited about some of these unknowns. And then for me, that screening was a roller coaster ride. I was not prepared for how intense they were going to make it, and I was just so amped about that. I was just jazzed over the moon about how this movie made me feel from all of the set pieces and stuff that we'll get into. So I was curious how you felt, your immediate reactions coming out. Were you like super jazzed? Were you like, yeah, I'll sit on that? Zeta, we'll start with you.
Well, I was excited about it. It gave me all the feels. I feel like I always talk a lot, but no, I really like Scream 4. So when they mentioned that one, which we knew, like, you know, spoiler again, Kirby was coming back.
Yeah.
So it gave me all the feels because, you know, for that one, part 4 is, you know, kind of, not trying to sound cheesy, it's very special to me. So, you know, being able to bring her back and seeing her, it's just like, all right, now come on, bring Stu back, you know? So it's just like exciting to see that it's like, it's so crazy how far this franchise has come. You know, like, it's just, no, it's just, it's magical.
It's magical. John, how did you feel? Do you need two watches to reappraise, or were you right off the bat? How did you feel?
Well, I did have two watches. Uh-huh. Actually, I watched it by myself once, and then I went and watched it with my wife about a week or two later. I liked it. For people behind the scenes, quick glimpse behind the scenes, we were talking, should we do like rank our favorite screams or rank them in order? And that was quickly shot down. We were like, we're not going to open that kettle of worms. It's not, no, that'll be terrible. There's going to be too much disagreement from people, not us. I mean, we like what we like,
right.
But other people, very strong stances on it.
Big time,
so
yes.
I liked this. I liked this a lot more. The on my first viewing, I probably liked this. This might be like only second behind the original. Because the second one was what it was. Like, I have my issues with the second one. The third one is very campy. The fourth one, I'm still not entirely on board with. I can give it another watch. It's still a harder watch for me. Five, it took me multiple viewings because I didn't really know the people. This one, I knew the people.
Mm-hmm.
I was also more familiar with like Jenna Ortega and like the number of like Easter eggs and everything that was happening. Like the fact that, I mean, we'll probably get into it, like Samara Weaving is in this.
Yeah.
And if you notice at one point, the bride from Ready or Not, someone's wearing the bride costume.
That's
from
so
Ready
cool.
or Not. I don't know if New York is really like this as far as the costumes, but damn, if it is.
It is.
Is
yes,
it?
Halloween is the best time to go to New York, especially it's a must go. I remember we already talked about this, just going into detail. There's always like a Halloween parade and it stretches throughout the city and everything like that. And then afterwards, there's so many after parties and then there's bar parties. So then people, you know what I mean? There's even house parties that you could just loop in. I mean, I went into someone, I know, but it was other people. It's fine, you know, but everyone on the train, they're wearing their stuff. It's very magical. And now thinking back on it, that is kind of creepy. I didn't really think anything of it, though.
I absolutely adore that we have a New York fact checker here. She can tell us what is real and what is not.
I like the pacing. I mean, we'll get into it, mm-hmm. like the opening sequence and kind of just trying to figure out the reveal and what's going on with the characters, etc. It just felt smoother to me. Like, I felt like more like I was along with the ride, mm-hmm. less of, wait, who is that? Because I'm not trying to relearn people.
Right,
that's hard.
Right.
Which is funny, too, because you watch Scream for the first time, you don't know who any of them are, but they get cemented as the bedrock of the series. It's like, yeah, well, I didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
So by six, I was genuinely impressed that... I would argue that Scream is probably the most consistent horror franchise there is.
As far as
mostly
like...
because it just quality. Like if you were like actually like rankings, granted they didn't have to endure they were the turning point in the 90s. So they didn't have to endure the late 80s, early 90s franchise curse for so many series. But I think generally speaking, what they've been able to do with Scream from 1 to 6 has been pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of opening, though, let's break mm-hmm. down that opening. Because obviously, the first one established the reoccurring pattern that there would be an opening sequence. And this one, you get a little bit of a 1-2 punch. You do get Samara Weaving, who is a mm-hmm. film professor, named Laura Crane, because of course there's going to be a horror movie
reference.
Nod there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought it would end there, and I was shocked that they unmasked, and then they quickly decided to kind of put that mask back on with an extent with that ghost face played by Tony Revolo. Then he gets killed. So what did you think about the opening sequence? The 1-2 punch of it all.
Just what you said. I was like, oh, wow, that was actually a pretty quick kill. And it felt almost anticlimactic. I was like, God, it didn't. There was kind of a build and you saw it coming. Like you do. Like you're literally like, okay, you're being lured down an alley.
Yeah.
Like, and then she gets killed and you're like, okay, you got killed. And then the mask comes off and you're like,
that's not happened. Not this early. Like,
yeah, how are you showing us who the killer is right away? And then they set up just this pretentious dick who you're okay with getting stabbed and shoved into a refrigerator. What college kid just keeps a bottle of vodka sitting on the nightstand with a couple of clean glasses waiting for him? Come on, man.
Tequila. Tequila. Because it
was
is...
Was it tequila? Okay.
Yes, because it was Espolòn, which apparently was a sponsor or something because...
Oh, well, that's what she was drinking at the bar. That's what he has in his room, too. I didn't notice that's what he had in his room. I thought he was drinking vodka.
I noticed that
she was drinking that at the bar.
Yes, they both had it, and they were a sponsor. And if you saw it at an AMC theater, you would notice at the bar that they had themed Scream cocktails with Espolòn. So they had some kind of like sponsorship deal going there. So good for them. Good for them.
Really cool.
Yeah. But no, I thought it was a pretty, that was a good opening. I was pretty happy. Like I'm never really upset with the openings of Scream, even like Scream 3. I still like the Scream 3 open.
Yeah.
But it, yeah, it worked. Good job for them to bait and switch like we hadn't seen before.
While kind of establishing motive, and at least that it would be personal, and what was the other thing that I thought? They had like Jenna Ortega woven in there, which is kind of anomaly because it's usually very self-contained. So they were kind of opening it up a bit.
The fact that the end of the movie comes back to the beginning of the movie and you didn't even necessarily realize that there was a connection.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, wait, there is a connection.
Yeah. Xena, thoughts? Did this sequence work for you?
Yes, it did. It was such a surprise, like already what, you know, John stated, where it's just like, you know, that's something that we didn't see, you know, happening. But I do want to touch on, you know, Samara Weaving. I remember there were like a lot of people saying how, oh, I wanted to see her more, right? And it's just like, I agree, but it's just like, you know, what an honor it is. I mean, it sucked for her character, but it's just like, wow, that is such an honor to be that character. Like, it's iconic, timeless, perfect fit for
her. She was Drew Barrymore.
Yeah,
it's perfect.
It's great. Like, honestly, I felt like this one was going to be different once I saw that. Because it's like, you know, that setup, we're very familiar with it. But then that happened. You know, we had to, like, do a double take type of thing.
I think the Easter egg stuff we're just going to end up touching on throughout this conversation. Because there are just way too many. To list, but I did appreciate that directors Tyler Gillette and Matt Bettinelli-Ulpin could not resist the, you know, you don't always want to go for low-hanging fruit. In this case, it's so on the nose perfect. You couldn't, if you, you know what I mean? The character that gets unmasked, Tony, he's watching Jason Takes Manhattan on the TV.
That's so cool. Yeah.
Now, I think that just set the bar high right off the bat as far as if we're going to do Easter eggs, right? But I love that because this was shot mostly in Montreal, and I feel like they did such a good job of making this feel like New York, not Montreal. I feel like Xena would definitely be able to speak to that better than I could. She is well acquainted with New York.
Yes, I agree. And this is kind of jumping ahead. We kind of talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I don't remember if we were recording or not, but I really love that, like the way that they showcased New York. They showcased New York from people who live there, not tourists, you know, because I know like, you know, Jason Takes Manhattan. Yes, he went to Times Square, but it's just like, let me tell you guys something. Times Square is packed. And I hate it there. So I love the fact that we didn't go there because when you live there, you go, but it's like, not really. Once you go once, there's no need for you to go again. And plus, again, people who live there, that's not, you don't go to like the touristy spots and you don't go check out, you know what I mean?
You want to get away from Liberty. The crowds. Yeah.
Yeah. So you just have a regular like type of routine. So I love the fact that they showcased that. I love the fact that they, you know, they took the subway. They went to a bodega. You know, they showed their apartment building. It was just like they went to a party. Perfect. They were sitting in the park. Realistic. So, yeah. Awesome job with the set design. To me, it felt very real.
It felt real. Yeah. The opening also kind of pokes fun a little bit of giallo and sets up commentary. So, you know, obviously the Scream franchise is very known for its meta commentary on horror. How did you feel about this movie? Did you think it included commentary on horror? And if so, do you think it worked? And do you think, I know I'm asking a whole bunch of questions at once, but did this have commentary? Did it execute it well? And do you think that commentary is crucial to a Scream movie?
Okay, but we need one question at a time.
Okay. One at a time.
I got stressed. I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry.
She's sweating watching.
I know. Three questions. Okay, question one. I'm going to start in reverse, but I'm giving you one at a time. So roll with it. Xena, do you think that having commentary on the horror genre itself is absolutely necessary to have in a Scream movie?
I think so, because at this point we already had, this is number six, you know what I mean? And the fact that kind of creates something more realistic, because it's like after, you know, the fourth time, it's just like, come on, you know what I mean? With Sydney as an example, why do you keep going back to Woodsboro? Right. So just kind of showing that, I love the fact that they're showcasing it in a creative type of way. And being realistic, because even when you think about the first one, the second one, we all have, oh, well, I wouldn't have done that, or shouldn't they know this or know that? So the fact that they know the rules, and you know what I mean, but the fact that they're still showcasing that. Did I answer it?
Yes. Well, we'll keep asking other questions that'll elaborate on it further. So that's, but John, what about you, for you? Is having horror commentary necessary to a Scream movie?
I mean, I think at this point it is. I'm more curious because now they've, with the most recent one, the rules were the rules of a franchise. I don't know what's next. Like, they did a horror movie, a sequel, a trilogy. I don't know what four they were even talking about in four. Like, what they referred to. But then it was the legacy for five and now a franchise for six. Well, what's seven going to be? I don't even know, unless that, I don't know, it was some sort of a reboot. They were calling it like a legacy reboot for five. So there'll be some new term for seven. It's more that
there was a requel in five.
Or yeah, that's what it was. So it kind of makes me wonder more than anything else. Yes, it feels like that commentary does need to exist. That almost wall breaking, let's explain the rules to the audience sort of thing. And at the same time, I just don't know where it's going to go. Like, yeah, cool. And what the hell is seven? Like, what's the next one? Unless it's a full reboot of the series, which it's not going to be at this point, at least not yet.
So the follow-up questions that I asked was, you know, what do you think the commentary is for this one and if it executed it well? And as an example, you know, obviously you have Mindy Meeks, played by Jasmine Savoy Brown. She's the Randy. She is literally Randy's niece. And so she's the one often giving these roles. And last one, she was explaining the requel. And this one, she's explaining, there's the whole scene where she's explaining to her group what to expect from this sequel that they're in. I feel like that's only a surface level. I feel like that's kind of like, you know, the requisite scene that you would have in Scream. But to me, this commentary kind of shifted, and it started with the first one, and it's definitely played up hugely here. And I think that's where it's going to go. And that the commentary is on the fandom itself. It's not on the genre. It's turning the mirror and making you look at yourself, because everything is around like a subset of toxic fandom. Which is not to say every fan, Scream fan, is toxic. It's just specifically like Richie in the last movie is, and how that carries in. So I was just curious if you kind of saw it that way, or if you kind of latched on to a different part of commentary, or maybe you thought that it didn't really execute commentary at all, if that makes sense. I don't know, Zena, if you wanted to
weigh in. I agree. I think that it was showcasing the fans, you know, definitely holding up a mirror. And I also feel like every single time it just feels like they want to make women, well, especially with part six, they want, you know, women to be the villain, you know, like especially with what they did to Sam in this one, where it's just kind of like, you know, she was a victim, you know, she was a victim, but it completely turned and everything. So the fact that a victim is being turned into a villain, and it's just like, it's like everybody just pretty much was against her. And I could totally see that happening, especially on places like Reddit. I just stay away from
So
and it's unfortunate, but it's just like, I love the fact that they showcased that, because it's always kind of been that way. Because even with the first one with Sydney, you remember the girls in the bathroom, they didn't believe her. You know, and then when she went to college, people were making fun of it, you know? And so it's just kind of like, man, she just can't get a break. So I feel like they had like a lot of things going on. I love the fact that it just transformed into, you know,
now
something
else.
Now
in the digital age. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it fits.
It does. John?
And I thought of it, it felt like a lens shift to me. It didn't feel like it was commentary on horror at all anymore. It actually felt like it was a societal commentary, especially a generational commentary.
Right.
That, like, you look at these two college kids who are going to finish this film, and they're going to kill, and they start out by killing the film professor. It's like, oh, fuck her. She gave me a C on my Giallo paper.
These highbrow Giallo fans. Yeah.
Exactly. It's this numbness that I think that it's this conversation that people so casually... Not only will watch true crime and listen to true crime and speculate on it and have their favorite serial killers. Like, serial killer tours is a huge industry. There are people who literally say they love Jeffrey Dahmer.
Right.
And we have kind of this cultural numbing. One, because our attention spans are getting so short.
Yeah.
And I think not only that, but we're mixing that with entitlement. So we only care about things that are in our face. And when the narrative shifts, we're kind of okay to just jump on that bandwagon. Like Zena was saying, start blaming the victim. Well, why was she there? Oh my God, she totally did it. Oh yeah, I don't know, but I don't know, but I know, sort of thing. Like, or I did my research or whatever bullshit stuff people say now.
Yeah.
So it felt more like a societal commentary on just how generally, or even helicopter parenting, this concept of like what one parent was willing to do for his kid and then what he's willing to do for his quote unquote family.
Yeah.
And the weird toxicity that invades all of us, even within our home lives. And so it felt more a bigger scope. They were shifting they were pulling the lens back.
Yes.
Not just the toxicity of fandom, but the toxicity of this social commentary society that we have. Yeah.
But they frame it within the horror, you know, like the horror fans and the horror professor. Yep. And it's still applicable across the board, which is great because those are conversations worth having beyond just among horror fans. But yeah, it's very interesting how it's like the meta has gone meta in a way is how I view this. So yeah, I think that means we all dug what it was saying. We'll probably dig into some of those threads a little bit later, but obviously we have to talk about something that John already touched on, which is this solidifies the core four. The four survivors of the last one have now dubbed themselves the core four. Some maybe a little bit hesitant to embrace that, but the core four versus the Woodsboro three, the original three, there was definitely a lot of conversations had going into this movie because we lost Dewey the last movie. Nobody knew how much Courtney Cox would be in it as Gale. And then obviously Neve Campbell bowed out entirely. So did you miss them? I mean, Courtney Cox's Gale is in it for a bit, but I feel like this was definitely way further in passing the torch to the new generation. So how did you feel about, did you miss the originals or were you so absorbed with the core four?
I miss the originals. And first with Dewey, when they played his music, I wanted to die because it's just like, you know, that hurts so bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I'm still like, why, you know? So, you know, I love seeing Gale, you know, but it's weird. I love seeing her, but I didn't want to see her because I don't want anything to happen to her.
Yes.
And with Sydney, I missed her. You know, I kind of thought that this was going to be like a PR stunt, that she was going to be in it. She was going to pop up and be like, boom. And I'm like, yeah. But then she's not there. And I'm like, oh, no, you know. So I feel like they were missed. But I mean, I still really did enjoy the movie. But, you know, it's just because we love the characters. We're used to the characters. So that's why, at least for me.
Sean, how did you feel?
Well, a quick side note, as Zena mentioned, the music. Bravo to the music cues.
Yeah.
Normally, I've made it well known that I barely even notice music in movies. But when some of those cues from like the original Scream movies were hitting, I was just like, oh, they're doing it.
You're doing it, Peter.
Yeah. But, you know, I was glad that Neve Campbell wasn't in it, actually. Gale kind of has that line of like, she's lived, she deserves some peace.
Yeah.
And I agreed. Like, she was safe. She was not there. Don't drive there.
She's
Don't
got kids.
Show up.
She's got a husband and kids. It's harder for her to be like, I'm just going to go tackle something that doesn't involve me.
But it makes you wonder, like, I wonder how old her kids are, and will Ghostface eventually start going down that road trying to go after, you know?
I don't know about plural, but they did show her with a stroller in the last movie to indicate that they're little.
Yeah.
So
I was okay with her not being in it, and honestly the story had nothing to do with her anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I felt more like her just acknowledging that, like, Sydney knows she's in the mountains was literally just for the fans, because she hadn't been brought up at all, other than the fact that they were trying to connect why the masks were happening. Nobody had brought her up. Ghostface had never mentioned her. There was nothing like that. So it would have felt really weird. It's like, okay, I'm going to show up and help. It's like, nobody asked. Why are you putting yourself in the middle of this? Now it's just getting weird.
Yeah.
No, be safe.
Yeah.
Live your life. Because like you've done enough.
The movie from the opening sequence makes it clear that this Ghostface is very, it's got a very personal vendetta against the Carpenter yeah. sisters, not Sydney, but against the Carpenter sisters. So, you know, I do think that from what I'd read, the door is still open. I get the impression based on this one that she would not have been anything more than a cameo anyways. Mm-hmm. So if that means that, you know, she'll get paid what she wants and deserves for the next one to pop in and it fits organically, then yes. But as for what we got, I feel like it worked out well because Gail is in it. She has a couple of key scenes, some nostalgic and some for plot, you know, propelling forward purposes. And I don't think that had Sydney been in it, that scene, that final scene with Gail would have hit as hard because I don't know about you, but I was like holding my breath, white knuckle, like, don't you dare Dewey her.
yeah.
And her line about like, tell Sydney he didn't get me was like, gut-wrenching. Like, I was so sad. I'm like, don't you dare do it. The collective breath, I think, the entire theater let out when they found a pulse. Like, that hits because it's Gail and because she's alone as far as the survivors. She had the Carpenter sisters with her, but I don't think that that line, you know, would have hit if Sydney's right there, you know?
Yeah. And a quick side note about the core four. At first, I groaned when Chad said core four.
Yeah.
And like they all chuckle and they do it and whatever. And they're like, ah. And I was like, that was dumb. But by the end, damn it if Chad didn't turn me. I don't know. He's so infectious.
He is. Like, he's like, himbo. Ah. He's a nice himbo. And he kind of becomes, by the end, the new Dewey. Not that Dewey is replaceable. Kinda, yeah. I just want to make that
poor
clear,
guy's a freaking pincushion.
Yeah, just like Mindy, his twin sister, is the Randy, but she's not actually Randy. You know, they're archetypically similar, personality-wise, very different. But yeah, I very much was happy with how the core four grew as characters. The introductions are out of the way. Now we get more comfortable. Sam, you know, Melissa Barrera, I liked her in five. I thought she was incredible in six. So yeah, same. I'm with John. Like they totally won me over. Like if I didn't already like them, this would be the movie that definitely is like, yeah, you sustained this movie. So yeah. I don't know. We should definitely touch on the other returning player because I know Scream 4 being important and magical to Xena. Were you happy with Kirby?
I was very happy with Kirby. You know, I knew that she wasn't going to be a main character, you know, that we weren't going to be for the whole time. I just love the fact that it felt like we were like listened to as fans, you know, and kind of like in four, we didn't see her die. So it's just like then when they confirmed it in five, it was just like, yay. Well, they kind of did, but we knew, you know.
Yeah.
So that was just, you know, for me, it was just awesome to see. And I hope that we see her again. You know, I'm open to seeing her again just because I love her. And then the fact that her and Mindy, like, they should just be friends and hang out and go get tea and smoothies together and watch movies, you know?
Yeah, watch a horror movie night. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Wes Craven did say a long time ago, like, that you don't see her die. So we kind of didn't intend for that. And then we did get the little Easter egg last movie where it's like, she was confirmed to be alive.
Yay.
Conversely, I'm not going to ask John about Kirby. I'm going to ask because they gave fans Kirby. They did not give fans the thing that John wanted most. In fact, they even had a line about it. So
sorry.
I'm sorry. This is a spoiler episode, so we can talk about how Stu was not the killer. They even added his TV into the museum. So
no. So
was that a sad disappointment for you, or were you ultimately fine?
I'm ultimately fine. I just like going down those stupid rabbit holes sometimes. It's like, oh yeah, Stu's totally alive. Like,
so yeah, you were fine with Stu now. Would that have been disappointing though? Like, if it turned out that, because there were a lot of theories that and a lot of fans hoping that it would be a very angry Stu out for revenge. Would you have been disappointed to ultimately have been like, well, I saw that coming months in advance?
If I'm being 100% honest with myself and realistic about my reaction, I probably would have been disappointed if Stu was behind it all.
Yeah.
Because that's not who Stu was.
No.
Like, that wasn't the purpose. Stu was the henchman. He was the second guy. He wasn't the, and depending on how you want to look at the franchise and who's actually planning the murders, et cetera, through like Scream 3, like that wasn't him. He wasn't the mastermind. So I'm okay with him not suddenly being some weird James Bond villain reveal, like, oh my God, Stu was behind it the whole time. Like, that would have been.
It's very Scooby-Doo, right?
Yeah, and I'm also, not saying that it couldn't have been done, but
and also order. It didn't really kind of fit because yeah. It was about the Carpenter sisters.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been a nice surprise and people would have been happy. But then when you think about it, it's like, wait a minute, you know, where have you been?
Maybe we found out that his mom and dad really were pissed and his mom and dad worked at the same company as the Carpenter sisters, and their dad fired his parents because of the therapy he needed. So he's mad at the Carpenters through their parents. And you guys can just cut me off at any time because I'm going to keep talking stupid.
No. You've got a whole thing. We got to see how far this conspiracy web goes.
Nah. I'm gonna stop. Okay. That was it. Stu's mad at the Carpenters for some manufactured MacGuffin.
That is not what actually happened, which is a perfect segue. Because there are many things that makes a Scream movie a Scream movie, the whodunit is absolutely one of the top three things. Mm-hmm. How important is it to you that it be a whodunit? And did this do it well? Were you surprised?
Well, for me, I think that it's very important for it to remain a whodunit because I feel like that's just the whole franchise, you know? And it's always so much fun guessing who it is. And no, I did not see it coming. I was confused and I was shocked, you know, in the seat, especially, okay, well, without going too much into it, I'll just stop right there. I was just very confused, but it was just like, it was pure genius, and they would have gotten away with it too. I'm just gonna sound like Scooby-Doo, but I'll stop.
It wasn't for those meddling
kids. Yeah, we'll circle back to that, but we'll get John's reaction first.
Okay.
I kind of guessed it, but not 100%. I guessed. So early on,
Quinn
Bailey, Quinn? Played by Liana Liberato.
When she mentions losing her brother, like early on, that's what made me think, well, wait a second, you lost a brother. Mm-hmm. Like, is that going to be some weird connection? Like, and then it turns out it absolutely is.
Yeah.
So, and then when you don't actually see her die, then like that's always a big thing.
You
in
just
Scream
see
movies
her
or Saw movies or anything.
Body you with the throat.
Yeah. But Scream movies have never been afraid to show you someone dying.
And this one doesn't.
So, no.
I mean, I thought that they were trying to showcase a different way because there was some other stuff that was going on and we were distracted.
It was. Sure. Yeah.
So I kind of guessed those two. Like, it made sense to me. Like, it wasn't some big, oh my God, I can't believe it. I was kind of in my mind
those
playing
two.
Along.
Who was the other one?
And her dad.
Oh, okay.
So, like, when her dad, the moment that he called, so at first when he said let's check in on Kirby, like check the FBI field office, at first I was kind of like, okay, maybe he's on the up and up. But then when there's this random, when he calls out that like Kirby's been off the job, da, da, you don't see him get that information.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, we're never afraid to see people find information in these type movies either. So when someone just presents information that they found, it's also suspect. Now that said, I did not see Ethan being the third. I didn't see that coming at all. And then it was funny that it's like, yeah, no, you totally nailed it, like right off the bat. Like,
isn't that incredible?
Fun of him.
I
like, you guys
that.
Called it.
I love yeah. that. Xena, you may, because I feel like there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
I do think that there was like some kind of leak because I remember seeing something, but I was trying to give it wide berth and not because I didn't want it spoiled, but there were some spoilers on the killers. There was definitely some suspicions for me that came and went, but the three three of them. There's three killers in this one. That's a franchise first. And it's all worth it for the flanking of the ghost faces with the synchronized blade wipes. Incredible. But Xena, definitely, I feel like you have thoughts on this. So, like, elaborate on what you were saying earlier.
Yeah, like, I completely bought Quinn's story about her brother. I was like, oh, what's your brother? You know, and then, you know, with the cop, it was just like when he came out after seeing his daughter, but like, I believed him, you know?
Well, Dermot Mulroney is a fine actor.
He is such a great actor. I'm so used to always him playing that guy that's just like, you know, be in a relationship with me. But yeah, anyway, okay. Point is, I just really didn't see it coming. But then when I started to like, thinking about it like right now and everything, and I also rewatched it this past weekend with Ethan, it was kind of like he was giving like weird vibes, but it was just that's like the second watch that I realized that, you know, where it's just like there were certain times obviously that he wasn't around and it makes sense with that. And then again, going back to Quinn, it wasn't like, you know, brand new that she had a dude in the room, you know? So right. I just assumed that, oh no, you know, I don't know. I was thinking that maybe it was going to be like a student who was in the background or maybe even like a professor. I don't know. Like, I have to be honest with you. Sometimes with everything that was going on with this, it's not that I forgot that it's a whodunit. It was just more if I just wanted to. Yeah. You just kind of wanted to just enjoy it at that point. But yeah, I just didn't see it like coming at all. And I remember when they did reveal it and there were other people in the theater too, everybody went, oh, and it was like, okay, I knew I wasn't the only one, so that made me feel better.
I agree. I'm also of the let me enjoy this roller coaster ride and we'll arrive at the reveals when so I liked how they definitely, I liked the reveal, I liked that Mindy called it. I even thought it was hilarious that she ran from the hospital to be like, guys, I know. And it was after the fact. So that was that was very fun.
I missed the reveal again?
Yeah. Aww. You didn't need to miss it. You knew it, Mindy. So, which leads us to speaking of the Liana Liberato, her fake out death scene, which is just a bare fraction of the intensity. Not that this series has ever shied away from really gruesome deaths. I mean, they established that right off the bat with Drew Barrymore's disemboweling. Mm-hmm. But I really, really liked, it felt personal. This is a personal motive, and it felt personal and very vicious. And the way that they did some set pieces that maximized the suspense was so good to me. The ladder scene in particular, where they're all having to crawl. It's the same extended sequence that begins with Ghostface in the apartment, and they're trying to get across the apartment. On a rickety ladder that's not stable. So good. And I don't know
I was just gonna say, honestly, I would have been Anika. I would have been too scared. I'm sorry. Like, I can't do it.
We do have to give special mention to her, because this is a new character. She's technically expendable. It's heartbreaking. She's Mindy's girlfriend. She's got sass. You root for her right away. And she gets got it. Like, those blades, like, it goes in deep, and it twists. You see it twist. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this girl is in real bad shape. How is she going to get across this very athletically inclined escape route? I don't know about you guys, but anytime a character like this cries that they don't want to die, it instantly, like, gets me in the feels, because it's like, baby girl, I don't want you to die either. And then, you know, that's not, she does die, and it's really, really gruesome and brutal and unpleasant. How did you feel about the intensity of this movie? Did you have a standout set piece like me in the ladder sequence?
What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Dawn Reeve, who's been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detectives shaken, to find the Southside Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, the scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, the Scare on Prime Video, now streaming.
I mean, I love the bodega.
The bodega?
The bodega scene was really great of not like the not just the set pieces, but the characters and the interactions. And, you know, the shopkeeper does have a gun. Of course he's got a gun. Mm-hmm. And very nearly blows Ghostface's head off.
Yeah.
And like just the claustrophobia of the situation, but also just the noise, and there's the mirror and the proximity and everything that, and it's fully lit. It's not dark. And yet like that almost adds even more tension. Like, well, we can see them, then he can see them. And it's like, and they can see him. And so I thought that scene in particular, I really liked.
Yeah.
Is that yours too?
I mean, I have a long list, but just to keep it short and to give something different. All of them. No. I'm going to say I really like the setup when she was talking to her therapist in the brownstone. I really like brownstones. I think that they're creepy. They're beautiful, but they're creepy. And so the fact that, you know, you have this therapist who invites, you know, clients to come in. I mean, crazy that just happened.
Another Ready or Not crossover.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was just kind of I like the setup of it because I knew that something was going to happen to him, you know, because of what he played in before. And then the fact that just the way that it looked.
Stabbed through the nose.
Oh, that was brutal. Yeah. It was so brutal. I think I'd seen somebody comment that they thought this movie was played for laughs. And you know, obviously to each your own, we all have different reads on it. But I just thought the kills were super intense. I didn't think that a lot of them were funny or meant to be funny. Like, man, that stabbing in the face, the Annika's death is ruthless. Like,
even with what happened with Mindy, I was worried for her. That was very vicious.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I was, and I'll talk about this next week, but I watched Evil Dead Rise in theaters. And there were people in the theater that were burst out laughing during the Evil Dead Rise. And I'm like, there's not a lot funny happening right now. I know there's like funny demon stuff.
Yeah.
Or the demon being quote unquote funny. But some of the parts they were just bursting out laughing. I'm like, that was devastating.
Played straight. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think what that is a lot of times that's just their tension reaction. Mm. Yeah. That like it happens and instead of screaming or panting or whatever, they laugh because that's their release of the tension.
I get that. That's like going through a haunted house and cackling. And
Oh, totally. Yeah. So some people, they might even after the fact think of how much they laughed and then think something in that context like, oh, it was played for laughs. Well,
yeah.
No, clearly it was making you laugh for other reasons unless you totally didn't like the movie,
well,
I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, but I also see when you add like a series that there is definitely a comedic element to both franchises that, you know,
there is.
Can definitely blur some lines. But yeah, I just like the intensity of this one. They had comedy for sure and in dialogue and some gags. But for the most part, this was super intense for me. Yeah. We have to talk about the finale being one of the intense set pieces. I am a big fan. One, there's definitely something very visually interesting about an abandoned theater that feels very appropriate for this franchise. And then it serves a narrative purpose, too, because it ties back to Richie and the reveal that, surprise, these killers, they are related. That is their golden child family member who got murdered and they're out for revenge. but there's a lot of stabby. This is the first one. Not that Sydney's ever not been a badass, but there's a bloodthirstiness to these Carpenter sisters that I just feel like is perfect, not just for these characters, but for slashers. You know, when the final girl was first coined by Clover, the film theorist, she talked about, you know, what a final girl is. And it's usually like you know, Laurie Strode. They're very virtuous girls, and this is how you know that they're destined for final girl status, whereas these are not those girls anymore. This is modern final girl, and they're going to be just as vicious as the killers.
Yeah.
It's about time, but I don't know. Did that work?
I love that.
Did that work for you too?
It worked for me because kind of like what you said, it's modern now and they're sick and tired of this, you know? So it's just like, go for it. Stab them. And I do have a question, but I'll wait until afterwards.
Okay. Okay. John, did it work? Do you like bloodthirsty final girls?
I do. And I assume that it's also, it's continuing the momentum off the last one of people thinking that she was going to be the killer, or one of them was going to be the killer, or both of them are going to be the killer. I think it's just kind of snowballing that concept of, okay, like now at one point is this trauma going to be shifted to something else? And, you know, and I appreciated that there was much less Skeet Ulrich in the movie. I just don't like de-aging technology. They don't get it right yet. And it's uncanny valley to the extreme.
It looks weird. Yeah.
So I really appreciated that he was just kind of a reflection in some glass, and that it wasn't a reflection in a mirror or something like that, if they were going to show it. Cause I kind of forgot about that part anyway. I'm curious to see, assuming the same people are involved with the next Scream, how they're going to progress the character, because of, we see this mounting trauma and as well as a brutality and a viciousness for the survivors, to see how psychologically if they're going to dive into that impact, which I think they have to at this point. I think that has to be a part of like the next plot line or something. So yeah, no, it worked. It was definitely like, holy shit.
Yeah. think about if you're Ghostface and this is what you have to deal with. I might think twice. Be like, I'm just going to go home and watch some giallo.
Yeah.
maybe I'm just going to shoot her from a long way away.
Yeah, maybe Indiana Jones it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What was your question, Zeta?
Well, yeah, for you both, with the character Sam, I really like her. I love the fact that she has so many layers, and like with part five, when we found out that she could see Billy, she could see her dad, you know, it's just kind of like, oh, that's a cool thing, like a little surprise going on. Mm-hmm. So, okay, we know that Billy was a terrible boyfriend, clearly, you know, but do you think that he's a bad dad? Because he's looking out for his daughter, you know? I mean, people were trying to kill her, so...
But that's assuming that she's talking to a ghost and not her fractured psyche.
True, but... She's... Just a question, you know?
I feel like, no, he would not have been a good dad just because... Well, one, we won't know because he died before he realized he was ever going to be a dad. But he has some severe issues to the point where his mom left him, and therefore he was like, I'm going to go on a murder spree. That's not healthy. That's not good dad material.
It isn't. But I mean, okay, so
of what her dad could be in her mind is definitely like a very good self-preservation skill.
Yeah. He's supportive and empowering.
Yeah. Empowering, yes. He definitely helps her survive, for sure, because both movies have been like, P.S., you're in danger, girl. So,
yeah. I just love it when he tells her to gut them back. I'm like, aw, daddy.
Stabbing is more ruthless than I think a Ghostface is. Like, there is, like, this strength and power in those stabbings, like, no, I don't want to be on the receiving end of her anger.
Oh, when she picks out the knife and he says, good choice.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, dude, that was gross. That was yours. Don't be. Yes. No, you're being
your daddy's girl. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am happy that Tara got a little bit of a hero moment too, which apparently was something that she wanted and gave feedback for. She was like, I think it would be really good if I had something to do here versus just being off to the side. Mm-hmm. I think it worked because, you know, you got three killers. You're going to need help, Sam, even though you are a little bit of a killer. So, yeah, I think we've touched on the plot and the Scream components. But this movie, as we mentioned, is packed to the gills and then some with Easter eggs. So thoughts on the inclusion of Easter eggs and maybe some of your favorites. Zeta, I'm sure you got tons.
I guess guess just going back, because we kind of already touched on it. I love the fact that, you know, in the opening, with that cat, what was it? Was it Tony? That's his real name?
That's his real name. Hold on, I got the character's name.
Jason Carvey. I love the fact that he is a big horror fan. He really loves the stab movies. And the fact that he's just, you know, at home thinking that he's gonna have a nice relaxing night watching after murder. Jason takes after murdering someone.
Draining the life out of a professor. Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. And he just went home like nothing happened. What an animal.
Just gonna pour himself a drink and watch Jason Takes Manhattan.
Yeah.
Like,
so I just kind of like the fact that they've been showcasing like Jason Takes Manhattan, which, you know, it's makes us feel great. Give us all the feels. And the fact too, like, you know, I remember once upon a time, not anymore, but I remember once upon a time when I would talk to someone who they don't always watch horror, right? But then he didn't know what a giallo was. He's never heard of it before. But obviously the fact that this is like bringing, oh my God, bringing people more to the light.
Yes. Indoctrinating them to giallo.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Just nerding out.
All good. All good. Did you have, what are your thoughts on the Easter eggs? Did some stand out? Are you like, this is too much?
Well, you know, kind of like I said with Samar Weaving and the Bride and stuff, that was probably my favorite because I just thought that was funny. But I mean, it really, the whole movie is Easter eggs. Yeah. You get to the final set piece and it's literally
a whole
made
museum,
of Easter eggs. Like, it's everything. You're like, oh God, that was the sheet, and that was this, and that was
the TV,
and that it was everything. So, you know, I think it's probably one of those things where I can only imagine there's got to be some YouTube video out there that says like every Easter egg in Scream 6, and it's probably longer than the video that's all the unanswered questions in Lost.
Yes.
And it's just kind of like, yeah, so it wasn't necessarily that one stood out more than another as much as, I think they were all, maybe with the exception of the final set piece, they were subtle enough for me that it wasn't like, all right, because there's a line between too much fan service. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need to answer every question. You don't need to refer to everything. This story can be its own thing. And I thought it did a good job, at least as far as my mindset was concerned. Maybe I'll go back and be like, oh my God, why did they include that?
Oh, that's no, so much. No. But I think I don't know how many viewings it would take you to find them all, because the subway costuming alone, like a costume designer, Avery Plews, went nuts. There are any horror movie you could probably think of is going to be in that cart.
Yeah, and kudos to the person who's going to dress like Pinhead on Halloween. Jesus.
Yeah. Babadook is a rep. Yeah, so you've got...
Oh, yeah, the Babadook one was good.
You've
yeah.
got the costumes, which is a whole other thing. You've got the movie Easter eggs, like paying tribute to the franchise itself. And then you've got other... You've got the Wes Craven stuff, which is not nearly, like, in your face as the last one, but it's there. Like, the Bogota's name is literally referencing one of the porn movies that Mr. Craven had directed under a different name.
That's so cool.
It's a very deep cut. Yeah, they're like some very deep cut things. I did interview Avery Plews, and she talked about how like some of the color choices for, you know, Courtney Cox would be emulating Wes Craven's birthstone, and just things like that. Some of the street names, things, numbers have intent. If you look at the bodega, I don't know if you could see it without really picking it apart, but apparently there's Miska's Mead, which is also a nod to Brad Miska from Bloody Disgusting, one of the co-founders. Yeah. So there's like all sorts
of... Oh, man, that's awesome.
That's like, so cool.
We don't have enough time to go through all of the Easter eggs, but they were also paying tribute to people and, you know, their career rise. So Miska being one of them. You have Lonely Island. They both... were coming up together. I think they were one of their first friends, what the directors told me when I interviewed them. So like Akiva Goldsmith is a voice in this. I Think You Should Just Leave Tim Robbins is one of the ones who you can hear him. He's the, when they introduce Bailey or Quinn Bailey as promiscuous, he's the one behind the door saying, "Who's Paul?" or something like that. Like that's
oh,
so
really?
you have like some surprising voice cameos in here that you wouldn't suspect. So yeah, it's there's a lot going on, but I think the movie does such a good job of being fun that you're not like dwelling on these things. Yeah. I think, does that sum it up? Do we have anything else to add? Any final thoughts? Things we might have missed?
I feel like there's so many things I feel like we missed, but I'm definitely going to rewatch it again because I only saw it twice. And I don't know about this, but I've been hearing from other people that this is like their 17th watch. And
oh my.
Like people, because they do want to like catch everything and like fully experience it and stuff like that. But I'm excited to just rewatch it again tomorrow by the time this episode comes out. You know, just for the feels. I love how witty it is. I love how violent the script is, and it's very modern. And I feel like there's something for everyone.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the only thing we missed are Chad's internal organs.
Oh, Chad.
That poor guy's been stabbed
so many
times.
Chad, he's Dewey 2.0. He's like that sweet baby that you just want to protect, but boy, can he take a sharp end of a blade.
Evidently. Good for him, man. Mm.
Yeah.
I get a paper cut and I'm just worthless.
I guess.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can we just real quick, can we talk about just the ending? Like, okay, so when Sam has the mask, I know I keep on going back to her. I just feel like there's just so much to unpack with her character, you know? With her mask, do you think, because I know some people were saying, oh, one day she's going to be the killer or something. Do you guys think that that's in her?
I think this movie was doing a really good job of saying she's got the potential and the darkness in her, but she's also got the presence of mind to prevent it. She was going, she was going to therapy before the Ready or Not actor, Henry Zerny, was a terrible professional there. And she was very concerned with having her younger sister address the trauma. So I feel like that was her saying, like, this is not the path I'm going down by discarding the mask.
I could see, more than putting on the mask, I could see some iteration in the future turning it on its head where someone decides to put the ghost face mask on and come after her, and she literally almost immediately starts hunting them. Like, all of a sudden, it just turns into ghost faces running. Not in the final scene. It was literally...
She's hunting the...
Yeah, you done fucked up.
Yeah.
Now you're in trouble. I don't think she'll put on the ghost face. I'm more curious to see what else they do with the character. Because I feel like that's, I don't want to say too easy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're building a complex enough final girl out of her.
Yeah.
That it's got to be something deeper than, okay, now she's the villain. You know, what is it, you die a hero or live long enough to be the villain or whatever crap. Like, I hope they don't do that. I hope it's more complex.
Yeah.
Same.
I agree. And one final question then that just occurred to me. As vicious as this was, the body count is actually not very high. Mm-hmm. Does that bother you? Is that a for or against or neither here nor there? I personally did not mind. I wanted these people to live. And that says a lot about a slasher, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, same. And also, I feel like because it was so brutal, I mean, it felt like it was more than enough.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not going to lie. When I watched it, it didn't bother me.
Okay.
Because like, I like these characters.
Right.
But kind of, like, after the fact, I was like, but nobody important died.
Yeah.
So it kind of turned into season 4 of Stranger Things, the spoilers, where it's like, okay, if people just have plot armor, then it's going to take me out of it. Like, there has to be stakes. Like, was it sad to see Dewey die? Sure. He had to die, though. It was important for the script. Randy. Him dying in the second one was huge. Didn't see that coming at all. All of a sudden, he gets yanked into a van in broad daylight, which they bring up in this one. And it's like, holy crap, like that adds so much more to the movie when there is that vulnerability of anyone can die. Because they keep saying anyone can die. Yeah, but nobody's dying. So, like, I feel like I kind of need those stakes in the next one. I don't necessarily want them to die.
Right.
But I think it's important for the franchise and the storytelling for someone to die.
For sure. But
since
for this
everybody
one...
got to live this time. But for this one, I'm good.
Yeah.
Next one.
Somebody's up the stakes. Yeah, I agree there.
No.
But yeah, for this one, I think it's fine.
No.
Well, the actors can all live. The characters have to die then.
No.
How about that?
It still hurts.
It does. It does hurt. But I do think this might need more than a core four to make that happen, because there really wasn't a whole lot of people dying. From Randy to Dewey, the bar of like important people was, it's always been pretty low, all things considered. Yeah. I think you need to kind of beef up some tertiary and secondary characters to make that work. But yeah, agreed.
I agree. And I was just going to say, and it does make sense too, like that they're, when you think about how many people were dying, because think about what just happened to them like a year ago. Why would they want to have a whole new bunch of new people around them? You know, unless necessary, you know, with Chad and his roommate, and then, you know, the Carpenter sisters with Quinn. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that wraps it up.
It does.
And that's the Bloody Disgusting podcast for this week, everyone. If you'd like to read more from Megan, you can check out her reviews at bloodydisgusting.com and on Twitter at HauntedMeg. Xena can be found on her own website, realqueenofhorror.com, and the YouTube channel of the same name, or at Lovely Xena on Twitter. And you can hear me in my final week at Camp Creep Away on my podcast, Creepy. Don't forget to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast app, and feel free to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at BeDisgustingPod, or drop us an email at BeDisgustingPodcast@gmail.com. So for this week, I'm John.
I'm Megan.
I'm Xena.
Grab some popcorn, cozy up on the couch, and watch something you love. Just make sure it's something bloody.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Thank you.